It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
2 days after special counsel Robert Mueller took over the Russia probe in May, newly released text messages between demoted FBI agent Peter Strzok and reassigned lawyer Lisa Page suggest they discuss the merits of joining Mueller's team. Strzok writes, "You and I both know the odds are nothing. If I thought it was likely, I'd be there, no question. I hesitate in part because of my gut sense and concern there's no big there. On Fox, Republican lawmakers said the texts are more evidence of political bias.
But I care a lot about the Department of Justice and the FBI, and it breaks my heart that we are having to have this conversation about two agents that only wanted to get the president. They didn't have any interest in clearing him.
Another Republican who read the text said the FBI officials talk about a, quote, secret society within days of President Trump's victory.
There was a society of at least two people, to include Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, that had a desire to keep Donald Trump from becoming president, and then an expressed intent to work against him after he was elected president.
In a cryptic text, Strzok writes, "I personally have a sense of unfinished business. Unleashed it with MYE, or mid-year exam, the FBI's code name for the Clinton email case. Now I need to fix it and finish it."
All right, that was Catherine Herridge on the Fox News last night. Sandy Rios with you, and that, of course, honestly, is the biggest story, if not of the morning, of the week, probably in the life of this country. And we're going to be talking about that a great deal today. I'm going to slow down and talk through all of the angles, as many as I can cover, and all of the newest revelations, some of the older revelations, to kind of help you understand exactly, if as I can, what's happening here. This is the rest of Catherine's report. Let's listen.
The FBI blames a technical problem for a five-month gap in the Strzok Page texts and would not comment on whether the Bureau has taken physical custody of their phones to recover the messages.
It is no coincidence, in my opinion, that we're missing texts that run from when the Russia investigation was launched right up to the point where you have the Mueller investigation being launched.
Writing in a tweet, President Trump called the missing texts one of the biggest stories in a long time. The Senate senior Democrat called out Republicans for undermining Mueller.
But he shouldn't be thwarted in any way, and the diversion that they're trying to do, both with Mueller and with others, is not good for the country.
In a separate development, President Trump said the White House had no advance notice of Attorney General Jeff Sessions' special counsel interview last week.
No, I didn't, but I'm not at all concerned.
The president also denied media reports that FBI Director Christopher Wray threatened to quit after pressure to remove his deputy, Andrew McCabe, a longtime lieutenant of fired FBI Director James Comey.
He did not even a little bit. Nope. And he's going to do a good job.
Those close to the president tell Fox News they always expected Sessions would be interviewed, but they didn't know the timing. A White House spokesman said today that they were emphasizing transparency and their cooperation with the special counsel, Brett.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. That was Catherine Herridge. Yesterday, if you were listening, you probably heard Joe DeGeneva, former U.S. prosecutor, with us. If you didn't hear that, please go to the podcast, go to our Facebook page and listen. Because Joe is just has amazing insight. He and his wife, Victoria Tensing, are longtime Washington residents, and they know the inside and the outside. And Joe really laid it out for us yesterday. We're going to refer to that a little bit. And I also want to repeat to you, we'll put this on our Facebook page, actually. All that talk of that four-page memo that is we're trying to pressure Congress to release and the president to sign off on it. Joe actually says that's already publicly available in this form. And if you want to see it, here's how you see it. You just have to Google FISA report, April 26th, 2017. FISA ruling, FISA, FISA ruling, April 26th, 2017. And Joe explains, if you read just the opening of it, the very beginning of it, and then skip to page 70 and read to the end, it will tell you what's going to be in that report that's going to be revealed. And we'll put that again on our Facebook page so that you can access it. But if you want to look it up yourself, that's how you have to do it. There is a lot of things to look into, and we're going to talk about it, as I said, in great detail. But first, before we do that, there was an interesting report yesterday. Actually, I want to go to this. We're having some technical problems, so I'm speaking in a different mic, looking away from my papers, so this should be interesting. You think I have all this memorized? Not quite. But yesterday, in front of Chuck Schumer's house, because, of course, the next fight, apart from funding the government, which is going to be happening, that fight, in 3 weeks, is also the fight over an immigration bill. And it's going to be a huge fight. I don't need to tell you we talk about this all the time. So Chuck Schumer is taking a ton of heat from the left. In fact, last night he indicated that he's removing his offer to fund a border wall. He's under tremendous pressure, poor Chuck. I don't think I feel sorry for him. Last night, and as a matter of fact, lots of so-called dreamers visited Chuck Schumer's home, and this is what it sounded like. So if Chuck won't let us dream, we won't let him sleep. That's what they're chanting. But there's more, actually, more detail. Penny Starr reports about this. Penny, by the way, is a longtime reporter out of D.C. She's very reliable. She used to work for the Washington Examiner, and she may still, for all I know. But this is her story. She says dozens of illegal aliens surrounded Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer's home in New York on Tuesday, demanding that Congress pass legislation immediately to give millions of people in the United States illegally amnesty and a pathway to citizenship. And this is what they're chanting. They're chanting, what do we want? Amnesty. When do we want it? Now, they chant it. So illegal. They're not citizens. They're demonstrating in front of a duly elected United States senator's home, demanding that he make them legal. And of course, to remind you, it's not just 700,000, it's 3.6 million, as reported by USA Today just last week. And, of course, then you heard the chant, if he won't let us dream, we won't let him sleep. And so it goes. And kind of a follow-up on that, there's a report out of California. You know, California, the famous sanctuary state now. Another story coming out of there, an illegal alien Uber driver has been charged with 4 rapes in California. What he was doing was he was targeting like college parties where girls and guys get together and end up being inebriated. He would take the girls home and then rape them and then steal all of their possessions. He actually had a code name. And so he has been deported already once. But, of course, he's still here and he's safe and sound in California. But he's been charged with 4 rapes. But this is how this goes. And so the White House is holding firm. I'm hearing good reports on the president's resolve on this issue. And a lot of people are thanking President Trump for taking a stand on the Schumer shutdown. And it was over the issue of immigration. There's no question about it. And Donald Trump, the president, has indicated his soft-heartedness toward the so-called dreamers. You know, I don't have soft-heartedness. I told you, I'm a hardliner. But I understand that with him. And I guess we should be grateful that he has some tenderness about him. And he does. He seems to have a real soft side. But he's not willing to give up the safety of the country, like give up a border wall or give up E-Verify, which employers verify the people are citizens before they can work. He's not willing to give up and allow generations and cousins and uncles and heaven only knows who, to be brought in through chain migration. We have had 2 terrorist attacks in this country where the perpetrators came in through chain migration or the visa lottery system, which is the other thing that the president wants to abolish. But because the Democrats won't budge on that, the president has said, no, we are not going to deal on that. So we just hope and pray he stays strong on that. And then one last thing on the immigration issue. This is interesting from our friend Daniel Horowitz. And this is true. He says it's one thing to put out his colorful phrase here, false, let's just say false polling as a propaganda tool. It's quite another to actually believe it yourself and implement political strategy accordingly. That is the mistake Democrats have made by obsessing over superficial polling, suggesting that Americans, including conservative Republicans, are clamoring for amnesty. And he gets down in the weeds. And I've told you before that not all polls are trustworthy. I'd say most of them are not. It depends on the question that they ask. It depends on the sample of people they ask the question to. But most people don't see that. They just see, you know, 50% of Americans, 60%. We've been hearing this, you know, 70% of Americans want the Dreamers to be legalized. But they cherry pick the questions and they cherry pick their audiences and then come up with a false narrative. And even the Republicans have repeated these polls. But Daniel is pointing out to a brand new poll by Harvard Harris, which is a very comprehensive poll, he says, with a great sample. And Daniel says that it shows that Americans want a dramatic cut in legal immigration and a transition to merit-based immigration. Like, for instance, here's one of the questions. Do you think immigration priority for those coming to the U.S. should be based on a person's ability to contribute to America as measured by their education and skills, or based on a person having relatives in the U.S.? So what do you think the result was? The result was that by a margin of 79% to 21%, Americans of all stripes wanted a merit-based approach to immigration. And it goes on and on. There's a lot more. We'll put this actually article on our Facebook page so that you can read more of the questions and get a better idea and share this. It's the title is, it's with out of Conservative Review, Majority of Voters Want Less Than Half Our Current Immigration. And that, again, is by Daniel Horowitz. All right, so Doug McElway had an interesting report last night. If we have time for it, I think we just do. This may seem a little obscure to you, but there is a battle going on in many ways to take over in 2018. And, you know, the Republicans fought it when Obama won the presidency. They tried to take back, and they did. You'll hear this in Doug's report. You know what? I'll just be quiet and let him explain it. Doug McElway of Fox News. Here he is.
Change has come to America.
It was on election night, 2008, having lost the White House and both houses of Congress, that Republicans began a long-term plan to regain power. The first step was to redraw or gerrymander congressional districts, a power that 37 out of 50 state legislatures directly hold. It worked. Today, Republicans control 32 state legislatures and both houses of Congress.
The problem over time is that the science of data, the science of voter identification, have made both parties too good at doing it.
Districts have been drawn in contorted ways that maximize the incumbent's chances of winning. Goofy kicking Donald Duck is one description of Pennsylvania's Republican-held 7th district. Observers say North Carolina's 12th district, straddling Interstate 85, is so narrow you could open your car doors and kill everybody in it. Democrats are hardly immune. Maryland's reliably Democratic 3rd District has been described as among the most gerrymandered in the country.
Both Republicans and Democrats have asked the court to find that overly manipulated districts that benefit one party or the other are unconstitutional.
It's not an easy question for the high court, which could hear as many as 5 gerrymandering challenges this term.
How do you know when something is just a district and when something crosses the line into an unlawful partisan gerrymander?
In recent arguments, the court appeared divided over Wisconsin's map. Justice Ginsburg asking, quote, if you can stack a legislature in this way, what incentive is there for a voter to exercise his vote? Justice Gorsuch countering, quote, are we supposed to actually specify a uniform standard? Analysts say Democrats aren't waiting for a favorable decision.
Losing almost 1,000 seats in the House, the Senate, gubernatorial level, state legislature level over the 8 years of the Obama administration, that's going to take a long time to repair.
To that end, former Attorney General Eric Holder and President Obama have joined to form the National Democratic Redistricting Committee to do at the grassroots level in 2018 and 2020 what the Republicans did in 2008.
All right, so the battle is on, and even as complicated as that is, just understand that at all levels, both parties are trying to, you know, wrest control. An interesting poll that just came out, there are 11 vulnerable Senate Democrats who have just dropped, like plummeting in the poll. Bob Menendez, most notably, he's down to 29% approval. But John Tester, Heidi Heitkamp, Bob Casey, Claire McCaskill, Joe Manchin, Tammy Baldwin, Joe Donnelly, Sherrod Brown, and Bill Nelson have all dropped several percentage points in the polls. Reliable polls? I hope so. I didn't look into that part after what I just said. Stay tuned. Sandy Rios, we're going to talk about this scandal when we return.
Dr. Carl Truman, from the American Family Studios documentary, The God Who Speaks.
Typically, what sola scriptura, what scripture alone means for the reformers is this.
We accept the church tradition as an authoritative statement of Christian faith and practice as long as it lines up with Scripture. That's not the equivalent of the "it's just me and my Bible" attitude that we often find in evangelicalism today. It's we belong to a historic tradition, but we always need to check what the church is teaching in light of Scripture. So Scripture alone doesn't mean the only book I read is the Bible. Scripture alone means that the Bible is the ultimate principle by which everything the church ever says or does is to be checked.
Visit thegodwhospeaks.org.
Failure can be our greatest teacher or the nail that ends our dreams.
Welcome to TIPS with public school educator Dr. Bill Ziegler.
As parents, we have a responsibility to help our children learn that learning from failure is the first step to true success. We need to share examples of people who failed and how this failure motivated them to become successful. For example, did you know that basketball great Michael Jordan was cut from his school team? Abraham Lincoln lost 8 elections before becoming president. A teacher told Thomas Edison that he was stupid and couldn't learn. And Walt Disney was fired from his first job for lack of imagination. I failed a ton of times at school, but I kept moving forward and eventually I became successful. If you haven't failed, you haven't lived. So visit my blog for a great video about overcoming failure and use it as a tool to talk with your kids about making failure their greatest teacher.
Check out Bill's latest blog at 4tips.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Every so often, the Montclair Republican Club in New Jersey holds its monthly meetings at a Greek diner. It's a family-owned place called the Greek Taverna. They say the moussaka's really good. Anyway, a group of liberal activists is outraged over the diner's hospitality. They want locals to boycott unless the diner stops letting Republicans hold meetings. The Republican Club says the owners of the diner were deluged with angry telephone calls, nasty Facebook messages, a cavalcade of cowardice and rudeness. That's what the Republicans say. For the record, the Greek Taverna says they don't want any trouble. They just want to serve baklava. Montclair is known as a progressive town, a haven for liberals. It's really too bad they would bully a family-owned business simply for hosting a Republican gathering. But once again, we learn that those who preach tolerance are the least tolerant of all. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
We want to know exactly, you know, why those text messages were missing for 5 months, you know, exactly how that, you know, how they save that information, where it's saved to. We're sending out letters to preserve records to the private sector people that store those things, Google, certainly the Verizon, the telephone company. So this is all about making sure that whatever information is out there is preserved and that eventually the American people understand exactly what happened inside the highest levels of the FBI. You know, there's so many experts in IT that say that those messages are somewhere and they need to be retrieved. We need to see it because the timing is very suspicious. From mid-December of 2016 after the election till the day that Robert Mueller was actually appointed. And then those texts that Catherine Herridge was referring to occurred 2 days later when Strzok and Page were kind of talking about their careers and I think really considering whether or not they wanted to join Mueller's investigation. And, you know, the conclusion, one of the reasons they were reluctant to do so, and that's according to Peter Strzok, is because his gut sense was that there's no big there. We've gone through, this nation's been, dragged through this investigation so far, no conclusions yet. And one of the lead investigators, one of the deputy assistant director of the counterintelligence division that had probably been working on this for those 5 months when those texts have gone missing, is saying that his concern is, his gut sense is there's no big there. I think that's pretty jaw-dropping.
That was Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin on Fox News last night. You know, Senator Johnson has been all over this, I think, for whatever reason. Well, he's on the committee, but his staff seems to be very thorough in investigating this stuff. And they've been poring over these text messages between Lisa Page and Peter Strzok. And so he's sort of come out in a leadership position in the Senate. In the House, of course, it's Devin Nunes and then others. You're seeing lots of them on the air talking about, because they've seen this four-page memo, which I'm going to get to in just a second. But let me give you the latest. Catherine referred to some of this in her opening, and Ron Johnson just referred to it too, but let me see if I can make this as clear as I can. The text message, one of them, that Peter Strzok shared with Lisa Page, the girl he was having an affair with. Now, Lisa is an attorney for the FBI who was working with Andrew McCabe. Remember Andrew McCabe? I know you remember Andrew McCabe. We've talked about him so often. He is up to his ears in complicity with this, whatever this was. And he's retiring conveniently at 50, which is very unusual, I think, in the FBI in the spring. Many are asking, why in the world is he still there? But he is still there. Remember, his wife was given $700,000 by Terry McAuliffe to run for office in the state of Virginia. And Andrew McCabe showed, we know through his email and other things now, that he had a very definite bias and was complicit in not actually going after Mrs. Clinton and all of the scandals and her email and the Uranium One, and on it goes. So that's Andrew McCabe. And Lisa Page worked with or for Andrew McCabe. That was her assignment in the FBI. And then she was having an affair with Peter Strzok, who was the head of the intelligence portion of the FBI, and they share. It's amazing, really, given the positions that they held, that they didn't comprehend that maybe they should not be text messaging the kinds of things they did. But I think we should thank God they did, because that gives us insight into what was happening and what the corruption was. And, of course, you've already heard this, but we will repeat what's being referred to as a jaw-dropping. That's what Senator Johnson called it, a jaw-dropping text message from Peter Strzok to Lisa Page. And this is what he said. You and I both know the odds are nothing. If I thought it was likely, I'd be there, no question. I hesitate in part because of my gut sense and concern that there's no big there. There's no big there. And this is in the context of talking to her about joining the Mueller team to investigate any kind of dealings or collusion with Russia. Do you catch that? I hesitate because of my gut sense and concern that there's no big there. That's what Peter Strzok says to Lisa Page. And this is just one of their 50,000 texts that are being examined. And, of course, we know now that the FBI has conveniently lost 5 months of their texts, which took place during the most crucial events from the time that Robert Mueller was nominated, appointed to be special counsel for 5 months. The FBI says, we can't find those. It was a Samsung technical problem. We just can't figure that out. So there were 400 pages of text messages between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. One wonders, what were they doing? How can people work, honestly, forget everything else? If you were texting somebody 60 or 70 times a day, you think you'd be getting a lot of work done? Just asking. But that's a different side issue, but it's actually very important. So there, that's the jaw-dropping text that Ron Johnson was talking about. And then here's another thing that's pretty jaw-dropping true, really. This is from the Daily Caller. And that is the thing that you pick up in these exchanges is that they are feeling pressure to wrap up their probe on Clinton because they think Donald Trump is going to become president. They say that in really very clear terms. We better get this over with. We better find her not guilty before Donald Trump steps into the presidency. We have to hurry. We got pressure to finish this. That's what they're saying. In a text exchanged on July 1st, 2016, Lisa Page suggested to Peter Strzok, and again, he's the counterintelligence official. He's the head of it in the FBI, counterintelligence. So But let me go back. Lisa suggested to Peter Strzok that then Attorney General Loretta Lynch had foreknowledge that the FBI planned to exonerate Clinton in the investigation over her use of a private email server. Now, why is that important? Because the head of the FBI told us in a press conference, what we all felt pretty stunning, that in spite of what he had found about Mrs. Clinton using her email server, carelessly, he changed the wording, according to what we're reading, Peter Strzok had him change the wording to a term that would not cause her to have any kind of criminal implication. So he called it extremely careless. And then he concludes by saying that no reasonable prosecutor would bring charges against Mrs. Clinton. And he also told us in that briefing, the FBI director, James Comey, that no one knew. He didn't pass this by anyone. This was his decision. Nobody knew. He'd all kept this in secret. And so that was not true. We know now from these emails that the FBI director was lying to the American people, that the fix was in, that they had already decided they would not charge Mrs. Clinton for anything. And when you hear all of this, you'll see the lengths they went to exonerate her were just shocking. And so we'll get into more of this. Remember that Peter Strzok in these text exchanges with Lisa Page spoke of an insurance policy. So in case Donald Trump should happen to win, heaven forbid, by the way, I'll just read his words. He says it's going to be a Clinton-Trump race. Unbelievable. And then Peter Strzok writes back, now the pressure really starts to finish MYE. Now, MYE is the code word for the Clinton probe. It stands for mid-year exam. You know, they do give names to their missions. So MYE. Now the pressure really starts to finish MYE. Now, that's what they're saying. We've got to hurry and get this over with. We've got to exonerate her before Donald Trump, in case, horror of horrors, by some chance, he should win the presidency. So on July 1st of 2016, they suggested, or Strzok and Page suggested in a text exchange that Loretta Lynch, she was the attorney general then, appointed by Barack Obama. And remember, she met on the tarmac with Bill Clinton just by accident. They just happened to be there at the same time at Sky Harbor Airport in Phoenix. Got on the plane and chatted a little bit just before Hillary Clinton was interviewed by guess who? Peter Strzok. This is very interesting, isn't it? And you know what really surprises me? That as complicated as this plot, I'll call it a plot, was, that they, all of these intelligence officials and these smart people were so dumb. That was not smart to meet at Sky Harbor Airport on the tarmac. Anyway, they talked about their grandchildren. Nothing to see here. That's what they told us, remember? Well, we don't know what they talked about. I'm just telling you that we know now that Loretta Lynch knew all about exonerating Hillary Clinton. And Peter Strzok and Lisa Page knew about it, too. And so did Comey. And so that in itself is, you can't, I've explained to you before that lying in the FBI is the, like, unpardonable sin. If you're caught lying on your time card or on how you use your car, how you claim your hours, how you, I don't know, if you lie on a report, if you lie for a buddy, he does something and you lie about that, you can be fired. Lying is a very big deal in the FBI. So just keep that in mind as I'm sharing these things with you. All right. So remember, okay, I'm going to give you Comey's exact statement. This is what he said when he was reading his declaration. He said, I have not coordinated or reviewed this statement in any way with the Department of Justice or any other part of the government. They do not know what I am about to say. Okay, that's what the FBI director told us. And then Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, and more of their texts, they must be. I'm sorry, I always laugh when things are not really funny, when they're actually tragically horrible, which is this is tragically horrible. Can you imagine how they feel about all their texts being public? But I digress. But here it is for all the world to see. So this is what they say. It's a real profile in courage. Since she, meaning Loretta Lynch, knows no charges will be brought, Lisa Page wrote, sarcastically referring to Loretta Lynch. In other words, she stepped aside from the decision on Hillary Clinton publicly, made such a big deal out of, you know, I won't be the one deciding, I recuse myself. The reason she did that was because she was appointed by Bill Clinton. They have a great relationship, close and personal. And so this is why Lisa says it's a real profile in courage, since she knows no charges will be brought. So the gap on those 5 months of texts between Lisa Page and Peter Strzok includes the period in the Russian investigation from December 14th, 2016 to May 17, 2017, which was the day that special counsel Robert Mueller was tapped to lead the collusion probe. And remember, we know that James Comey, because he told us, he leaked his memo, his notes, supposed notes that he took when he was talking to the president, to his friend so that he could leak them to the New York Times so that it would cause a crisis and they could appoint a special counsel. So then they turn around and they appoint a special counsel. This is Rod Rosenstein, who's up to his ears in this too. They appoint a special counsel, Robert Mueller, who happens to be a very dear friend of James Comey. It's very convenient, all of this. And so remember again that Strzok was the one that interviewed Clinton. Remember, they didn't put her under oath. They only interviewed her for 2 hours. And that happened, 3 days after Bill Clinton had met Loretta Lynch on the tarmac at Sky Harbor Airport. He also interviewed Huma Abedin and Cheryl Mills. Those were Hillary Clinton's aides. Remember that they let them have their laptops. Remember that both of them made false statements to the FBI, inconsistent, false, but they were charged with nothing, unlike Michael Flynn, who now has spent a fortune trying to defend himself for allegedly lying to the FBI. And we'll get to that a little bit later, too. I think we're going to find out more and more about that as things are revealed. I know we will. I'm repeating this, but I want to repeat it because there's so much information. Peter Strzok is also the official who is believed to have edited Comey's exoneration statement, changing the original statement from grossly negligent to extremely careless, because grossly negligent is a legal term which would have carried a penalty. So always the helper, Peter Strzok made sure that James Comey used extremely careless in her handling of classified information. All right, the other thing that we know now is that Jeff Sessions last week spent hours being interviewed by special counsel Robert Mueller. What they talked about, we don't know. We can only speculate. The AP speculates. I'm not even going to read. You can imagine. I can't imagine that conversation and how it must have gone. I wondered if Attorney General Sessions turned the tables and asked a special investigator, Robert Mueller, a few questions of his own. I would like to think so. Let me just say that you can expect probably that Bob Mueller, based on his past behavior, is going to make a major announcement. He's going to try to change the narrative because this corruption at the DOJ and the FBI is unbelievable. I'm just getting started here. I'm just getting started telling you details. And so we think, excuse me, many of us think that Bob Mueller is going to change the subject. He's going to cause some big stir, make some a big announcement to try to get people's minds off of this, and I don't doubt that. Now, that memo that is we think will be released in February, but what has to happen is that the Intelligence Committee has to vote on it, and the president has to sign off of declassifying it, making it public. I'm hearing that many people think it's going to happen in February, but I've already told you that Joe DeGeneva told us yesterday that you can actually see what's in that memo by going to that that report that was issued by the FISA court. By the way, the FBI has not seen that report, and they're asking for it, and no one will release it to them, which is really ironic. When we return, I'm going to walk you down what we think is in that 4-page report, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk. We'll be right back.
train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. A 14-year-old physics major is now the youngest person ever to graduate from Texas Christian University. Carson Huey Yu started at TCU when he was just 11 years old. He majored in physics, but also minored in both Chinese, because he speaks Mandarin, and math. He will now tackle quantum mechanics in graduate school at TCU. There is no limit to what our children can become. Let us recalibrate our expectations according to God's word.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
The Lord wanted the people of Israel to prove him, to test him. You know, everybody says, well, I don't know if I can tithe or not, Pastor. You don't know how many bills I have. Well, the best thing you can do about your bills is pay God first and watch God take care of what's going on in your life.
Join Dr. David Jeremiah for his series, The Grace of Giving, next time on Turning Point.
5:30 a.m. and 7 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Physicians keep learning after medical school in order to better save lives. Shouldn't Christian leaders keep learning to better save souls? Hi, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, and online around the world. Are you a Christian leader who thinks it's important to keep learning? WBS online weekend and evening classes allow graduate students to become better equipped to make disciples in a constantly changing world. For more information, visit wbs.edu.
Are you a responsible person who finds yourself growing deeper and deeper in credit card debt and you're not sure how to fix the problem? Then get ready for a toll-free number that will put you on a path to financial recovery. Trinity Debt Management is a nonprofit organization that will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment. Put a stop to late fees and over-limit charges and reduce your interest rates by as much as 60%. You'll save thousands and become debt-free for keeps. It's not a loan. It's a smart way to relieve your stress, meet your obligations, and preserve your self-respect. If your debt has you down, we should talk. Gather up your bills and call this toll-free number for a free, no-obligation debt analysis. 1-800-788-1813. That's 1-800-788-1813. If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. FBI agent Peter Strzok is like the fictional character Forrest Gump. He keeps turning up in virtually every facet of the still-unfolding drama that was the 2016 election. Strzok was a central figure in the Obama administration's malfeasant exoneration of then-presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. Strzok was a prime mover behind the fraudulent dossier that was evidently used as his insurance policy to manufacture a basis for spying on Mr. Trump and his campaign, and to destroy them politically and in the press. Strzok also conducted the interrogation that set up then-National Security Advisor Mike Flynn, and Strzok texted that there was, quote, no big there, unquote, before he went to work on Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation of alleged Trump collusion with Russia to steal the election. Peter Strzok's next starring role should be as a sworn criminal suspect before a federal grand jury. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
No, I'm not at all concerned.
Did you talk to him about it?
No, I didn't, but I'm not at all concerned. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Kristen.
No, he didn't at all.
Not
even a little bit. Nope. And he's going to do a good job.
The president said today that Director Ray did not threaten to resign. How does he know that?
I guess that would be based on conversations that he would have had with Director Ray.
Does he think there needs to be a staff shakeup at the FBI?
Look, we have 100% confidence in Director Ray, and if anybody is going to make that decision, it'll be the director, and we're going to leave that in his hands to decide whether or not he feels that there need to be changes made.
All right, you heard the voices of all the reporters, the President of the United States, and Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and the topic there was whether or not Christopher Wray, the acting FBI, not acting, he is the appointed FBI director, was asked to dismiss Andrew McCabe for all the reasons I told you earlier and refused to and said he would resign before he would do that. So the president is saying he doesn't know anything about that, and Sarah is saying what she said. I kind of think it's true. And you heard, I hope, Joe DeGeneva with me yesterday talking about Chris Wray and how he needs to go because he's buddies with all of these people and he's protecting them. Whatever his motivation, he is, in fact, protecting them. And so that's another drama that we are going to be watching unfold. Senator Ron Johnson, again, was on Fox last night, and he mentioned something that I want to talk about next, this secret society. Let's listen.
Well, from my standpoint, this is under my committee's jurisdiction, federal records. And we were involved in the Hillary Clinton investigation. And I've been saying for a year and a half after former Director Comey granted immunity to Cheryl Mills on June 10th, and then on June 27th, Bill Clinton met with Loretta Lynch. And then on July 1st, Loretta Lynch announced that, well, she's going to let Director Comey make that call. And yet, in these texts that just got released, we find out that she already knew that Director Comey wasn't going to press charges. So top officials in the FBI knew that Loretta Lynch knew before she said that she was going to let Comey decide that he wasn't going to prosecute, he wasn't going to press charges at all. And then Comey later testified that there was no coordination between the Department of Justice, Loretta Lynch, and the FBI. You know, so that is coming into question. So what this is all about is further evidence of corruption, more than bias, but corruption at the highest levels of the FBI and that secret society. We have an informant that's talking about a group that were holding secret meetings off-site. This is bias, potentially corruption at the highest levels of the FBI that is now investigating. And now this is, and by the way, Robert Mueller used to run the FBI. He is in no position to do an investigation over this kind of misconduct. So I think at this point in time, we probably should be looking at a special counsel to undertake this investigation, but Congress is going to have to continue to dig. When you see this kind of bias, this kind of corruption in the FBI, you have to ask the question, are there similar individuals, highly biased political operatives, burrowed into the Department of Justice as well? I mean, does Attorney General Sessions really have a department he can rely on and trust as well? So, no, this is deeply concerning, and we're going to continue to dig.
All right, Senator Ron Johnson, and he's mentioning that secret society, which, according to the text between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, met the morning after Donald Trump was elected. Now, don't think that this effort to derail and destroy Donald Trump didn't start months before, because it did. But now, of course, Ron Johnson wants to know who that secret society is, and he says he has an informant. So stay tuned for that. I want to give you a little more information about what I believe will be in that four-page memo. And as I've said before, there are ways to access it. I read some of this by Joe DeGeneva yesterday, and not all of it. But he said he thinks it's spot on, too. So I'm just going to give you an idea. And remember, this has to be verified. But it seems to be coming from a reliable source. So according to this, and I think this is true, we've been hearing about the deep state. It's not just the FBI that's corrupted by a long shot. Let me read to you from in the Investigative Bureau. According to high-ranking FBI sources, the Bureau played a definitive role in plotting this sweeping privacy breach. But the FBI had much help from the NSA, the CIA, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, Treasury Financial Crimes Division under DHS, and the Justice Department. Federal law enforcement sources confirmed. The deep state caretakers involved are familiar names. James Comey, FBI. John Brennan, CIA. James Clapper, ODNI. Loretta Lynch, Jay Johnson, Admiral Mike Rogers. Now, Admiral Mike Rogers, according to some, ended up being the hero here because he's the one that warned President Trump that he was being wiretapped. Not before he was president, when he was a candidate. And that's why they moved the Trump campaign headquarters to Trump Tower, because they were warned by Mike Rogers. And then the other part of this list is Robert Hannigan, then director of GCHQ. What's that? Well, that's British intelligence. And so it looks as though, when you read this, that they did their wiretapping using British intelligence sources. And this was British intelligence sources who were using NSA's headquarters at Fort Meade. So it wasn't like they were in London doing this. But because they are allowed to wiretap, because this was against the law for American officials, they used British intelligence, and that, I guess, that sort of shows you the link or the inclination to use Christopher Steele to do the dossier. The dossier came much later after the wiretap, and their prime targets were, of course, Paul Manafort, Donald Trump Jr., Jared Kushner, and certainly Michael Flynn. I think Michael Flynn was probably their biggest target because, as I have explained to you before, Michael Flynn was hated by the deep state because when he was head of DNI, he tried to clean it up. He tried to expose it. He was the only military man who came out and exposed President Trump, President Obama's feckless treatment in the Middle East, saying that the enemy had been defeated, Al-Qaeda had been defeated and was on the run. And General Flynn said, no, they are not. That's not true. So General Flynn was hated. And trust me, forget everything else. If they could destroy him, they would do that. And I think that they came near to doing that. Well, the story's not over yet. And I'm hoping he'll be exonerated. So we'll see. We also think, this is amazing to me, that the government may have paid that Russian attorney. Her name is Veselnitskaya. She is the girl, the woman, the female Russian attorney that met with Don Trump Jr. and Paul Manafort and others in the Trump Tower. And it was that meeting that they cite as this terrible, no good collusion with the Russians. But now we think that this was all a setup. Now, again, I'm telling you what I guess this is more than speculation, but it hasn't been verified. This is what we think is going to be in that 4-page memo. And so she was barred from coming into the country because she's affiliated with what's now the Russian KGB. So she couldn't come in, and so they made an exception for her. It looks like Loretta Lynch made a call to Preet Bharara, who is the U.S. attorney in, I think, upper Southern District of New York, who was an Obama appointee supporter. And so what did Preet Bharara did? He allowed this Vilnitskaya into the country. They made a waiver just for her to come to this meeting in Trump Tower. So the whole thing, it appears, was a complete and total setup in order to create some sort of a narrative that Donald Trump was colluding with the Russians. It is just the most incredible story. There's a lot more to this. Of course, we know that now that the FBI paid at least $100,000 to Christopher Steele for that tabloid ridiculous dossier. And so we will put this article on our Facebook page, The FISA Abuse Memo Unveiled. The FISA Abuse Memo Unveiled, that's the first part of the title. But I have more to tell you. I think you need to know that General Sessions is now ordering an investigation of the missing stroke page texts. He's very involved in this, even though, again, he's not a person that's going to be on the television every night. He's not like that. But I think he's doing a lot of things behind the scenes that we just don't know about. Interestingly enough, you know that many of the leaders in the House, like Jim Jordan and Devin Nunes and Mark Meadows and others, are coming out swinging. Contrast that with other Senate Republicans who are just worthless from my perspective. One of them would be Senator Richard Burr of North Carolina. Who came out and said that he believes the missing texts are truly a function of a technical glitch. Why, it's just a technical glitch, says Richard Burr. So all the more reason why all of you folk in North Carolina need to get him out. And he's the head of the Intelligence Committee there, overseeing this Russian collusion thing. So, I want to change the subject quickly. I have to tell you this. This is amazing to me. Naturally, because all of this information is so damning, the left is not going to be quiet about this. And so they are developing their own narrative to fight back. Chuck Schumer sort of gave us a hint about it last night. Let's listen to him, and then I'll fill in a few more of the blanks. Here he is.
I think there has been a great deal of activity on the other side intending to either divert attention from Mueller or even stand in his way. I don't think that Mr. Nunes has played a constructive role, to say the least, and we're all worried about it. Mueller has to be allowed to do his job.
Okay. So Mueller, the narrative is this, and it's actually laid out in Politico yesterday. Remember, it's funny because Politico gets, how can I say this? Politico's more reliable in terms of facts than the New York Times. But Politico has the same bias as the New York Times. So they will write negative things, but they'll put it in the most positive way they can. And I'm going to give you an example of this. And this will give you an idea of what you're going to be hearing. This is what you're going to hear, how you're going to hear the networks, CNN. This is how they're going. Chuck Schumer just said it. This is an obstruction of Bob Mueller's work. They're just trying to make a lot of noise and create a distraction. And so, but let me fill in some of the blanks. This is from Politico yesterday. GOP escalates law enforcement probes as Russia inquiry heats up, with Mueller now focusing on the president. Lawmakers level new charges of bias and even potential criminal misconduct. So you see how this is going to go. So this is manufactured by the Republicans to try to get the heat off the president, because Mueller's, you know, closing in on this Russian collusion. So this is how they word it. Amid new signs that special counsel Robert Mueller is pursuing an obstruction of justice case against President Donald Trump, Republicans in Congress have intensified their own investigations of the Justice Department's and FBI's handling of inquiries into Trump's ties with Russia. I'm not going to have time to point out all the little slanted phrases in this political article, but it's a long one, and you can see that they are building the case that the Republicans, this is just political, and they're trying to get your mind so that you won't notice what Mueller's actually doing. They're trying to sort of stir this up, and they're not talking about the information that's being stirred up. They're only saying this is all political. And this really, this now takes the proverbial cake. This from a number of sources, but I'm going to read this one from the writer known as Sundance, he's a national security expert whose identity I honestly don't know, and some friends of mine don't know either. But this is what he says. The desperation of Democrats have crossed into ludicrous world. Representative Adam Schiff and Senator Dianne Feinstein have written a letter to Facebook and Twitter demanding an immediate investigation into the strong support of the Release the Memo campaign. Some of you, hashtag Release the Memo campaign. If you're not on Twitter, that doesn't mean anything to you, but hashtags are used to unify messages so that if you use a hashtag and a repeated phrase, you can draw up all the posts that are, all the information related to that. I guess that'd be the easiest way to say it. And it's been huge. Release the Memo has become huge on Twitter. So back to Sundance. He says, if you thought CNN was absurd last year when they spent 8 months investigating the 2016 election results and determined a conspiracy behind the mobile app Pokemon Go was a factor in causing Hillary Clinton to lose, well, Schiff and DiFi apparently have one-upped that conspiracy. This is their letter. Dear Mr. Dorsey and Mr. Zuckerberg, we seek your company's urgent assistance. Public reports indicate that accounts linked to the Russian government are again exploiting Twitter and Facebook platforms in an effort to manipulate public opinion. These recent Russian efforts are intended to influence congressional action and undermine Special Counsel Mueller's investigation. So, in other words, and if you read their letter, which I wish I had time to do, they are saying that this trending of Release the Memo is coming from Russian bots. Of course, then there is an actual report coming out of, I think, the Daily Beast. A knowledgeable source says that Twitter's internal analysis has thus far found that authentic American accounts, not Russian imposters or automated bots, are driving at Release the Memo. Hashtag Release the Memo. So it's nonsense, but that doesn't stop them. It's all, you know, it's all an effort to try to cover what is just the incredible amount of damning information coming out about who knows whether the Obama administration, whether President Obama himself is going to be mentioned in this memo. I don't know, but stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.